Michael Chabon proved he was a brilliant young novelist back in 1988 with The Mysteries of Pittsburgh. His publishing career has been a case of one hit after another, complete with film adaptations starring Hollywood heavyweights. So if Michael Chabon wants to dabble in genre fiction, he shouldn't have to worry about losing anybody's respect, right? Then I wonder why the reviews have been so conflicted for the Yiddish Policeman's Union. It's as much a detective story as it is a speculative novel about Jewish identity. Is it just a bad book? I don't think so. When he talked with Steve Paulson, Michael Chabon read a bit from his latest novel.
According to doctors, therapists, and his ex-wife, Lanzmann drinks to medicate himself, tuning the tubes and crystals of his moods with a crude hammer of 100-proof plum brandy. But the truth is that Lanzmann has only two moods, working and dead. Meyer Lanzmann is the most decorated shamus in the district of Sitka, the man who solved the murder of the beautiful Froma Lefkowitz by her furrier husband, and caught Podolsky, the hospital killer. His testimony sent Hyman Charney to federal prison for life, the first and last time that criminal charges against a verb over wise guy have ever been made to stick. He has the memory of a convict, the balls of a fireman, and the eyesight of a housebreaker. When there's crime to fight, Lanzmann tears around Sitka like a man with his pant leg caught on a rocket. It's like there's a film score playing behind him, heavy on the castanets. The problem comes in the hours when he isn't working, when his thoughts start blowing out the open window of his brain like pages from a blotter. Sometimes it takes a heavy paperweight to pin them down.
That's wonderful. I know writing is hard, but it must have been fun to write some of this stuff.
Yeah, I actually remember writing that particular paragraph, and I have a tendency to rock back and forth in my chair when I'm writing well, and I was definitely rocking while I wrote that one.
Well, in recent years, you have spoken out quite strongly on behalf of what's usually called genre fiction. I mean, horror stories, science fiction, detective stories. You've edited two McSweeney's anthologies of these kinds of stories. And you have made the argument that these genre stories should not be ghettoized, that they should get respect from the literary establishment.
It's been said, and it's not the case, that I want to eliminate categories or distinctions and have everything be this big mishmash. I definitely, that seems silly, but what I would like to see happen is that the bias, the inherent knee-jerk bias against what's called genre fiction, I would like to see that go away because it's ridiculous. And, you know, most of the great works of Western literature can be fit profitably for a reader into some genre or other than literary fiction, whatever that means. But what happens, what tends to happen is if a work that's coming very strongly out of some genre tradition is really good and is critically recognized as being really good, then this totally illegitimate move gets made where you say, but that's not science fiction. So, you know, Cormac McCarthy writes a science fiction novel or a horror novel or a Western, and because it's so good and it's by Cormac McCarthy, we pull it out of competition and we put it over and we say, no, that's actually not whatever genre it most apparently is. And that kind of exception gets made. I read someone comparing it once to what happens to great Irish soccer players, football players, you know, as soon as they become good enough to play for the national team, then they become British football players instead of Irish football players. You know, it's the same thing with science fiction. What I would like to have everyone acknowledge is that no genre, and I think that psychological, naturalistic fiction derived from de Maupassant and Flaubert and Joyce coming down through the great 20th century masters is every bit as much of a genre with its own conventions and expectations, both commercial and artistic, as any other. What I would like to have acknowledged is that no genre is inherently inferior or superior to any other, and it's a question of what's done with those conventions and not the conventions themselves. That something's being a work of science fiction or horror fiction does not preclude automatically it's being taken seriously as literature. And we used to know that. That's the part that I find puzzling, is that someone like Joseph Conrad or Edith Wharton or Henry James or Edgar Allan Poe would never have hesitated to you know, try to write a particular kind of writing, whether a ghost story or a sea story, an adventure story, with the thought that, well, if I do that, I won't be taken seriously by critics. I think we used to have there was a time when those biases were just not there, and a writer had a lot more freedom. And I think literature, as a result, was a freer, more interesting place because writers had the full range of all the different wonderful forms of storytelling that the Western tradition has evolved to work in.
And there are certain writers who don't want to be labeled this. I mean, I'm thinking of, I interviewed Kazuo Ishiguro when he came out with his novel about this alternative future of when people are cloned for their body parts.
Right.
He did not want to. He said, this is not science fiction. You know, I used some of the conventions here, but you know, I didn't want to have to construct a whole alternative world. I was just sort of, you know, that's not what I was doing.
Well, I understand that because there is a stigma, and it's, you know, if you are a science fiction writer, then you have to go into a special part of the bookstore. There's an apartheid in the bookstore, and there are restricted zones which you cannot pass out of. If you have been labeled science fiction, you're stuck in the science fiction section, which is unfortunate. When you have a writer as truly wonderful, as intensely literary and serious, and as global in her perspective as Ursula K. Le Guin, sort of stuck in the science fiction section with kind of flashy gold letters and wizards on the front of her book, when her books belong over in, you know, literature with the greatest American writers of the 20th century, you know, then something's wrong. And I can understand why somebody would be hesitant to tar himself with a brush that is so darn tarry.
Well, I'd be interested in getting your take on a recent review of your novel In the Nation, which was very laudatory. But this critic was making the case that great genre writing really only works in the spirit of parody. He was suggesting that you have to subvert the formulas of the genre to really make it come alive.
Right. Yeah, I saw that review, and I think that's an interesting point. It's a logical point. I think it's incorrect. And I think it's, you know, the examples, as I recall, that he instances are Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen, which, you know, is a parody of the Gothic fiction that Jane Austen obviously loved, and Don Quixote, which is, you know, so famously a destruction, a dismantling of chivalric romance and so on. And that this is what he says, that it's only by producing works like that that you can transcend genre. I'm sure he didn't use that phrase, but that is a phrase that one hears fairly often applied to work that is clearly genre work, but that somehow we've decided is good and therefore isn't really science fiction or fantasy or Gothic romance or whatever it is. I don't agree. I mean, I think, for one thing, Northanger Abbey is Jane Austen's worst book. The parodying of chivalric romance in Don Quixote, forgive me for saying so, but I think it gets pretty dull pretty fast. And, you know, the 73rd time that Don Quixote is making an idiot of himself by thinking he's, you know, enacting one of his great romances. To me, anyway, that's not what's so great about that book. What I love about the book is the archetypical relationship between Don Quixote and Sancho Panza. You know, I actually don't think that's necessarily a very good recipe for great literature. And yet, so there are other ways to subvert than by parody. There are other ways to transcend than through pastiche or mockery. And if you look at a novel like The Long Goodbye by Raymond Chandler, you know, that is a novel that came late in Chandler's career as a crime novelist. He had definitely had time to become aware, painfully aware, of the limitations and the restrictions of the hard-boiled tough guy kind of detective fiction. And yet that book does not parody the detective novel. It does not try to sort of dismantle or explode it. It produces an effect of weariness, of world weariness, of a sense of limited possibilities, and presents them through the character of the detective, Philip Marlowe, so that what you end up with, I think, is one of the most affecting portraits of sort of post-war 20th century, you know, guy, American masculinity that we have in fiction. And it's partly as a result of Chandler's banging up against all of those limits and restrictions, not to mock them, but to somehow fight against them and to sort of incorporate them in a way into the portrait of a detective that he's produced.
Michael Chabon is the author of The Yiddish Policeman's Union. He talked with Steve Paulson.